Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. I found my mind in a brown...
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Giants. Tom Holland, we have Jay-Z on the board. Jessica Zalewski, a unusual Friday appearance. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, I can see it. I'm not a squirrel. I said it for you. SP Futures down 15. Dow Futures 126. NASDAQ Futures down 54. You saved Matty Weber. He was in tough shape yesterday because he's the designated drinker this week for his firm.
Perfect.
And he was in and he had to sit there and listen to a bunch of Trump supporters the other night, which was tough for him, I know, because he actually lobbed out a couple of facts and they were fake news. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Martin, it's always great to call in and get Jessica's voice answering the phone.
Yeah,
I like her
it?
Way better than Matt.
Nobody
likes that Weber guy.
No, plus when the girlfriend's out of town, you can't count on him. She's the
okay.
But
he goes back into the schlub that we knew before he got whipped into shape.
Well, you know what it's like when you have people in from out of town that are mostly all married and basically get their get out of jail free card for the week for the conference, and somebody else is buying the booze. You know how bad that can get. Just saying.
Okay.
Yeah. And he says, plus.
Anyway, yes, we love Jessica and we love Matt.
Yes, and,
we Jessica, love you guys too.
Yeah, she says, tongue in cheek, I know, that's the way she is. Oil, under 60 bucks, ouch. I got my puts off, so I'm protected, but I didn't get my calls off, so I'm pissed off, so. There you go, Kevin. I would have liked to have sold some calls. The calls I was selling were only 30 cents. I should have sold them like $3 kind, the way the XLE is going down. What is the story? Natural gas going one way, oil the other. This is a crazy world where these prices... I wish I had gotten the memo regarding how many countries still get to buy from Iran. That would have been a very key piece of information. Obviously, some people had it. Others not. You know, it's just the way the world is.
Yeah, what are the terms of that?
I guess for
I don't know whether to care or not. Allegedly
for a while
to get out of it, or the terms that never mind for you.
Yeah, well, there's the like Japan still gets to buy now. They claim, you know, only for a while. A lot of BS in there, but bottom line is the big huge thing about November 4th, all these sanctions are coming down on them. The word was we're going to squeeze them down to, you know, a teaspoon oil a day. None of that's true, Kevin. None of it's true. Japan, China, India. The Emirates, of all places, I guess, so they can resell it, also get to buy their stuff from Iran. You know, it's like, what are we doing here? Why tell people one thing and then do the other? Obviously, I mean, I'm going to say maybe the Obama people weren't smart enough to trade on this, but I know the Trump people are. I mean, they're some of the best and brightest when it comes to this kind of stuff, and I don't know. It's kind of nuts.
So you don't think the Obama people were really good at parlaying inside information into personal fortunes?
They're not Wilbur Ross good or those kind of Jared Kushner good, let's put it that way, in my opinion. I don't know. They might have somebody in there that, I doubt if Obama's family has futures accounts. Maybe they do.
Bill Daley was the chief of staff. He's nobody's fool. He's nobody's second fiddle.
I don't think they were winging. These numbers are pretty big, Kevin. I mean, last Friday, the idea that you know, the president says one thing, then Cutler comes out and says something else, then the president says something. I mean, we had 200-point swings three times that day. I didn't see that in the Obama administration. So I don't think they were smart enough. They had the one stooge that would come out and talk about the labor numbers once a month, but that was about it. They had their own foibles, but I don't think this was one of them. The other ones might have been as bad.
I'll find that book that came out a few years ago that talked about how all the people and how they in Congress and how they amassed their fortunes, because many of them found their way into the administration too.
You know what else though is a lot of them, it shall we say, not spring chicken ages, as my grandmother used to say. A lot of them married into cash. You set you up with a different level of
feedback. No, but I'm talking about people who got wealthy after getting into Congress.
I'm saying a lot of these
Congress,
guys.
Not wealthy.
I went through three or four of the guys.
10 years later, wealthy.
I went through three or four of the dudes that you had mentioned, three of the four had married seriously wealthy while in Congress. Let's just say you set yourself up for a different class of female money wise, shall we say. The parties you go to out there as a senator or a congressman, you're much more likely to meet somebody with huge amount of wealth than you might in a Tripoli tap or a bowling alley. Let's put it that way. Is that a fair statement?
Okay. So you're saying if you can just get yourself invited to those parties, you can probably become a kept man or a kept woman?
Let's just say a senator without a lot of dough is probably is as good a catch for a lady as somebody else with a lot of dough. Not to the senator.
All right. Well, I'm gonna have to figure out how to be a senator then.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. Boy, I could. Who knows?
First. What's the first step?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You probably could just start being a rep. Who's the one guy that is McConnell? He married in all the dough.
Was Elaine Chao the?
Yeah.
Google is now talking.
Yeah,
she
comes from huge money.
my telephone is now telling me, all right, the first step is
no, she came from huge money.
Was Elaine Chao wealthy?
Yeah.
I don't know her family background.
Yeah, so they can't immigrated from someplace and within like 5 years had some huge, some bizarre deal. I don't know. Hey,
family came as part of a business expansion into the U.S.
Well, it could have been
like
something
that.
That's
real common.
Let's say they did something very fast, very quick. I did some stuff yesterday. I'll tell you what, Kevin, you're never supposed to do it. You're never supposed to do it if you work for any administration, not just this one. I actually went through some of the stuff and I was looking at, because Professor Snar is going to be on today and I like to be under the belt with him on economic figures. And I'm going to make this somewhat interesting if I can and not boring. I said, I really need to go back and look and see how much people made in the time that I'm talking about. Because we've been talking a lot about what if this inflation gets out of the gate. And, the weird part, Kevin, is you never hear, if we end up having to go to, say, 8% interest, or, just say 8, which, pretty darn high, but, all right, let's say 6. You know, it's $600 billion a year in interest in the federal government. I mean, we have to have really keep our eye on this inflation thing. Instead of bitching about the Fed going up to 2.5 to try and nip it in the bud, well, it's way past the bud, but nip it in the bud, we need to be worried about what if it actually is a little out of control and we got to go to like 6 or 7. We're broke, my friend. that's heavy crap.
That has always been the problem with the size of the debt, where people,
yep.
People didn't go crazy about it because interest rates were so low, so service didn't cost so much. But now, if it doesn't take but even 1% to make the cost of servicing the debt huge, and for us as an economy to maintain that, it's going to have to, almost by definition, suck the money from someplace else.
1% is $210 billion now. That's a number.
That's a substantial number.
Yeah. All right, so I dig back.
And this, this has been my arguably my biggest complaint about deficit spending for the last 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, whatever, when it started to ramp up during the Bush administration.
Well, we started by putting the
not that it was ever great, but that's where we started hitting some fairly bad numbers on that.
Well, the Clintons, when they had the big surpluses, which is by the first ones really since the war, they totally lucked out. I mean, because when you end up with the in 2000, when you had all the dot-bomb companies, people had to pay taxes on companies that went from $1 to $200, and the poor bastard who bought it at $200 and wanted to go back to $1 only got to take $3,000 off a year. So they basically had a surplus on the backs of, and I mean, it wasn't all capital gains, but a lot of it was. So we had surpluses for a while, and then Bush decided to put the war on a credit card. And the war is obviously continuing to, you know, to nail people. We're still paying for these wars. I mean, it's not even close. But anyway, yesterday, I'm always talking about what people were making back in, you know, 1978, 77, when I look at some of these numbers. And, you know who's got a massive amount of data on this I would never have guessed? Is the University of Missouri. I don't know why, but, they do, but here's, and of course,
okay, Kevin, see if they have a tech school with a big data.
They seem to have massive amounts of, but whenever you look at some of this stuff, you always find interesting things that you never set out to find. Here I'm looking at, and let's see, rate per hour in July 1, 1977. And it's got, you know, all kinds of people, asbestos workers. Those guys didn't get paid enough, I'm sorry. Boilermakers. Bricklayers, blah blah blah. Carpenters, $11.50 an hour. This is in July 1st, 1977. Get a load of this, Kevin. The year before, they were $10. That's how much of a wage increase they got. Now they're real high. Cement masons, $10.09 in 76, $10.69 in 77. So we're talking about these guys that already were starting to get raises commensurate with the cost of living started to go up. But here's a good one. Guess how much for a carpenter his insurance was in terms of dollars per hour extra that the somebody had to pay. Because there's numbers here for insurance, pension, and vacation. Okay, so, and what else? And also was the other one was other. Well, the other's small. So guess how much the insurance is per hour for somebody?
Well, I'm not going to guess. Tell me.
It's like 75 cents. So it's roughly $120 a month in 1977. If you put that in a CPI calculator, which, of course, I did, it comes out to $477. So what do you figure that insurance is today? $1,200? $1,500?
Something like that.
Yeah. So it's not even.
You know what? But you go back to 2008, 2009. A young single person, could still get a policy in the 150 to 175 range per
yes.
month.
Yes. Well, a male.
No, because my daughter priced it out.
Okay. Because I mean, it was always because when Maddie started the show, I got him a policy, and he was about that number. But I think it was a lot higher for women because last time I checked, Maddie couldn't have a baby. There was a big difference.
There's, you know, I just paused for a second there and thought, you know, there's got to be a punchline I can follow but I couldn't come up with it.
But actually, the money they would put aside for vacation was more than they put aside for the insurance. And your pension was around 60 cents an hour, 60 to 70 cents. Anyway, when I'm going through this stuff, and this is what boggles the hell out of me. I started digging in, and I found this once before, Kevin. This is what frustrates me about my inability to mess. Actually, you know, I don't know if it's so much my inability to mess with the internet as the government continues to change the reports in a lot of these Bureau of Labor Statistics and stuff. They make it harder and harder for you to find something. Why? I have no idea. But that's their shtick. Anyway, and if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there's all kinds of stuff in there regarding. I started to try and find the F-150 pickup. They have now. Last year we had last quarter, General Motors came out and said they make 605 hours more per car. Right. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has the price of pickup trucks virtually unchanged since 2000. Can you even imagine that? They claim that it's unchanged, and in last year to the year before, they actually got it going down like a tenth of a percent. What manner? Where are these guys coming from? So yesterday I decided, okay, I actually bought myself a pick me up, in roughly 2000. Here, prices for trucks, 2000 to 2018. This is the Bureau of Labor Statistics, historical pricing. They've got it up something like 0.1% in 18 years. And yet, the trucks experience an average inflation rate of 0.15% per year. In other words, trucks costing $25,000 in the year 2000 would cost $25,680 in 2018 for an equivalent purchase. Can you think of any bigger bunch of BS? The interesting part, Kevin, is I actually bought, I'm not president yet, so I can be truthful. I bought a truck in both 1999 and 2001. So I'm going to say I surrounded the 2000 number. And they were roughly the same price, you know, give or take a few hundred bucks. And I got the extended cab, real nice. Chevy picked me up, you know, Silverado with the Z71 and locking rear. Jay-Z, what's a locking rear?
I don't know.
See? I don't think Matt Webb would know anyway. Anyway, I paid, I don't know what it came out for. So I'm going to say in the mid-30s, and I paid like $29.5 for both of them, really, Kevin. So I priced one out last night in Edmonds. Now, our Bureau of Labor Statistics says they're up $600. You know what the fair price is for that exact same vehicle right now?
What's that?
$45,000. So how the bleep, Batman, do these guys have... That's 30%, 33% in 18 years. Now, if you put the $29,000 into the CPI, you count it about 37, which should be, not 45. How do these guys say it's the same price? What are they talking about? It's the same motor, the 5.3. I mean, granted, there's probably, you know, some computer in there. There's probably something, you know, there's probably a backup camera. There's probably some crap in there that's worth $1,000, but not 15. I mean, where are they? What is the purpose of this? Just to knock you people on fixed income raises or what?
Well, and the other, you know, the other part of it is, you know, you can't compare when the product isn't the same. So you're right. There's all kinds of things that are in cars now that cars and trucks now that weren't there before. So why bother with a historical comparison? It's like comparing a Volkswagen Beetle to the Jetsons flying vehicle.
I'm going to say
in many ways, it seems that it, you know, creating a statistic on that in the first place is just not especially helpful.
Kevin, I'm going to say that if I plop your behind in a brand new 2001 pickup, the first year they went from the 350 to the 5.3, and they might have one more iteration since then. Now you've got the big computer screen, and I'm going to say that vehicle is 95% equivalent. And in terms of longevity for you, in terms of what you can haul, and in terms of how comfortable it is, you've got the same vehicle. There's a few little added attractions I know that we account for, but I'm telling you, it's the same thing. And I mean, pretty darn close. But I'm saying, why not say it's 30 grand or something with the, you know, with the adjustments? Why say it's up 0.1% a year? I mean, what are you doing? It's not, we're not even on the same planet. You know, the list price for a Ford 150 pickup in 2000, guess what the list prices range for? And this is manufacturer's suggested retail price. $15,000 to $32,000. I'm going to say the base pickup right now is $25,000. So that's $15,000 to $25,000. If you get an XL with a stick shift, if they still make them, and a six-cylinder motor, it's going to be $25,000. And it was $15,000 in 2000. I mean, Kevin, we're not even on the same page. And yet these guys, if they can do that to pickup trucks, what are they doing to everything else? I mean, are we doing all this just to not give somebody a Social Security raise?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean,
although didn't we do a raise this year for the first time in a long 2% time?
2% or something, yeah. I think it's like 2%. But I mean, these are sort
but
of.
But that's not why I think lately that we've been doing it. And I go back to what I said earlier. I think the idea is that we want to keep the cost of servicing the deficit down so that we can have a bigger deficit.
How can you have sex and remain clothed? You sort of can't. Well, I guess maybe you could. I don't know. But the point is we want to inflate the...
I'll report back after the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, really? You got a big date?
No. I've got nothing going on.
But
I can try. I can work at it.
But we want to inflate the economy so the debt we pay back is worth half as much as when we borrowed it. That I get. I mean, that's what economists would do in this situation. If you owe somebody a lot of money, you inflate stuff out of it. Because if all of a sudden tomorrow every dollar was worth two, or not worth two, if they gave you an extra dollar for every dollar you had, you know our buddy Thomas, if he ever owed me $10, he'd be the first guy to say, here's your $10, right? Because now it's only worth five. I mean, we know we want to do that economically to pay all this crap back that we can't pay back. Yet how to do that without having inflation is sort of interesting, Kevin. So you have to lie on one side or the other, right? You can't learn how to swim and stay dry. I mean, we don't want any inflation, but we want to inflate the economy. Now, that's a puzzle, isn't it?
Well, let's say it's a task.
It's a task. So, I spent hours on this yesterday, and I'm like, this is worse than I even thought it was, for God's sake. But the bottom line is that the person who was making the $11 an hour as a carpenter back in those days, that would be worth $47 an hour now. And I don't think that person's making it at all. So he's not making the 47, okay? And the pickup truck is way more than it should be. So in terms of health of the population, I think when we talk about all the time, it's not so hot. I think we're right, Kevin. I mean, in terms of those kinds of things. And a lot of it, I think, is medical, a lot of it other stuff. But, I mean, if you go back to that era when all this stuff started, the inflation and so forth, it's really been an awful, awful grind for somebody in that middle area.
Yeah, you know what the big difference is, and there's been two waves of change in there. One is that you get more two-income families, which offsets that to some degree, at least in terms of money, not in terms of lifestyle, but in terms of money. And now we have more. We have since had a surge in single-parent families, which means now you really are behind.
Well, but let's take the two-income family, and this comes down to who was the Jay-Z? You weren't doing the show. Who was the guest we had, Kevin? That talked about the GDP and how it never gives you the right number, because if you have a park that 2,000 people use during a day, there's never a number on it, even though people use it. Yet if you put a high rise there, it's always going to be worth more than the park, because you count that and you don't count other kinds of things.
Yeah, I remember the guest. I don't remember the name.
Well, and that's just what once in a while when I really want to bore the hell out of people, I'll talk about you can't use the Chinese growth rate and compare it to ours, because the Chinese, when you move from an agrarian society into the city, you start counting things that you didn't count before. So a 6% growth rate there is different than a 6% growth rate here. Same way I'm going to assume, because of our age, that the male was the breadwinner 40 years ago. Wasn't always, but by and large he was. But the female had a real job too. I mean, raising kids, taking care of a house and stuff, is not like it's not a job. But I'd much rather have the go to work job than that job. Let me tell you. Having said that, all of a sudden, the second person in the home, male or female, goes to work. Now you're counting what they're making at work, and also you're not counting what they're not doing at home. All right, so, or you, the other situation is you hire a full-time babysitter. So now really, somebody who's doing, I'm going to say, not counted, I won't say doing nothing because they sure really were doing something, is now making $60,000 a year. And they're paying...
Right, and you have to net that against the cost of being at work. And I realize we're up against the clock here, so I'll see if I can summarize it real quickly. The difference is that we live our lives in the human being world on a cash flow basis, not an accounting basis. So from the individual family standpoint, it's cash coming in. From an accounting standpoint, you're right, we are not accounting for the productivity. So from a productivity standpoint, we've gained nothing.
Well, you're also not accounting for the expense to getting back and forth to work. And if you're making 60 and you're paying the babysitter 35, you're netting 25 minus clothes, minus train ticket, minus car.
Yeah, as I said, net. So the net is still, it still needs to be positive, but it's not 100%.
Right. But now you're
of the extra income.
But now you're counting the child care because you're paying for it for somebody else instead of you doing it.
Yeah.
That's if you just still down.
So the same work is getting done. Yes. The accounting for it is different.
S&P futures now down 15 and a half. Dow futures down 129. NASDAQ futures down 61. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation and Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Stocks,
jocks. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hoppentown. She's Miss Jay-Z. On the board, we have Mr. Kevin O'Neill as well. S&P Futures down 15.5. Dow Futures down 131. NASDAQ Futures down 63. So we're sliding. Now, we had the huge update after the election. Yesterday, we're down a little bit across the board. Dow managed to sneak up 11, but we still had the NASDAQ down 39. And S&P's down 5. Which wasn't much compared to the rally the day before, but now today we're starting to cut in the rally a little bit, at least so far. DAX down 72.6%, FTSE down 61.8%, CAC around down 47.9%, so fairly negative across the board in Europe. In Asia, we've got fairly serious down movements here. Nikkei down 236.105, 22,250, so well below the 22.5. We were talking about yesterday is the number we've been flying back and forth across like a fish, for God's sake. Shanghai down 36, 1.4%. Under 2,600 again, 2,698. Hang Seng, wow, down 625, 2.4%. 25,601. That's got to be close to a low in there. Fed keeps rates unchanged yesterday. I don't know why that's everybody knew that was happening, and they claim they're going to raise again in December and next year. We talked earlier about the danger of not raising it fast enough. I actually think they're behind the curve, but I'm hoping I'm wrong. Oil down 74 cents, 59.93. That's the lowest we've seen that in a while. Brent down 81 cents, 69.84. So the spread is $9.70. Natural gas, however, 3.60. If you stuck your nose outside, you see it's cold. Well, everybody thinks that the natural gas, the buildup wasn't what it should have been, given the fact the winter starts out, seemingly starting out a little colder than people predicted. So natural gas is... it's up 90 cents, 85, 90 cents in really a month and a half. It's a massive move in there. RBOB 161, that's another 2 cents down. So the good news is you can go fill up the jalopy this weekend, probably cheaper than in a while. A gold down another 560, 1219. Silver 1430. Dollar rallying and the Fed being hawkish. So that's a problem with the gold. One of these days the dollar's going to come down, the gold's going to go up. Question is, am I still going to have it by that time? Jay-Z, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Good morning, everyone. I hope you started out your morning a little bit more on top of the ball than I did. The time is now 6:37. It is the first snow of the year. Should we celebrate?
No.
Yes, we should. Today's high is 36.
I'm supposed to be playing softball on Sunday. How am I going to do that in the snow?
You could still play that in the snow. Yes. Just dress a little warmer.
Yes.
Wear some thicker gloves.
Yes.
Today's high is 36, low of 23. Phoenix is clear and sunny with a high of 79 and a low of 56. Last night, the Steelers beat the Panthers 52-21 in Thursday Night Football. In basketball, the Bulls were off, and the Suns were beat by the Celtics 116-109. Hurricanes beat the Blackhawks 4-3, and the Flyers beat the Coyotes 5-4. There are no accidents to report, and that's all I have. Back to you.
Well, here I thought, Kevin, that all we had to do was get a new coach, and the Hawks would be good again.
No, they have work to do.
I think they have a lot of work to do. Do they have one all-star now? They used to have seven or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, man. Yeah, you know, Taves is not what he used to be, and Patrick Kane is still really good. And, you know, would you deal Patrick Kane and see if you can get a blockbuster to start rebuilding your franchise?
I don't know. What is the as we go through this, and everybody was, I don't know, much shocked, but most everybody liked Coach Q. I did. What is the every one of these sports has some vagaries regarding how you rebuild teams, and I'm going to say hockey is more unusual than most. But correct me if I'm wrong here. In hockey, suppose you had 10 draft picks. If you did, you did the Patriots thing and you amassed draft picks, you draft these people. A lot of them you draft out of high school. They still go play a whole college career, right? Even though they, quote, belong to you. You don't get them for...
you maintain the draft rights, and then when they decide they're done with college, you have a finite amount of time to sign them. Otherwise, they go back in the draft.
But you could conceivably have all these picks and have a crummy team and not see anybody for 3 years.
Yeah, you can amass picks. That works.
But But I mean, in football, if you draft them, you're drafting them in their years, you know, 4 months later to play or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Hockey,
yeah.
Not so. So, the turnaround time, even in the best of cases, even if you did get the world's best picks and you use them appropriately, you could be 4 years out.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So it allows you to be bad for a while and accumulate high picks.
But that's hard to do with the amount of money the Hawks are charging for tickets.
I don't know that there's any need to tank either, because I don't think, other than the top handful of guys in the draft, I don't think that there is that big a deal. In fact, there are a whole lot of stars, because they can draft them so young, that a guy will go off to college and he may arrive on campus as a fourth round draft pick, but by the time he's leaving, you're looking at him as as if he were a first round draft pick, so,
or an eighth round pick,
or it could be an eighth round pick, yeah, or a non pick,
yeah,
but you don't, you know, the point being that you don't you really can stockpile and you don't have to tank to do it.
Right, but the dynamics of it are you're drafting people that are essentially 17, and they're going to play for you when they're 21. And the last time I checked, males can change one hell of a lot between 17 and 21. Some get bigger and faster and stronger, and some are just as
bigger,
big.
Bigger, stronger, Billy Beane theory that you know what kind of player you're getting if you draft them out of college versus high school. Because, you know, there's just not a lot of great ways to compare them. But the whole setup is different. These guys don't necessarily play for a high school team. They may play a club, then they go to juniors. You know, guys out of high school, they typically don't go straight to college. A few guys do, but most college coaches say go play juniors for a year or two and then come to college. So, you know, it's a different setup altogether.
Well, my significant other, Odd, has a friend who had two sons. This is, I don't know how this goes. And the first one was one of these. He was one of the first kids I knew. It's going back a ways, Kevin. It was on every one of these travel baseball teams.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a hell of a football player, too. So the kid's one of these Mr. Everything at age, you know, 12, 13, and on up to where every school wants him for football. And I said, Odd, you know, I said, What's the kid like physically? And she goes, what do you mean? I said, well, is he already shaven? And, you know, but things that you know about if you happen to be a guy. And she goes, oh, yeah. And I said, well, he's probably already matured enough to where I'm not so sure he's going to grow anymore. He's just ahead of everybody else physically. And it turns out he ended up being somewhat of a star at Mount Carmel, but he was, because he played both sports, but he ended up playing defensive end at like 170 pounds, Kevin, or 180 pounds. He never really grew. He was fast as hell, and he played and he started, but then he never really got drafted by anybody in baseball. Meanwhile, his younger brother, who was kind of, you know, big kid, kind of, you know, I'll say a little dorky, all of a sudden he keeps growing. He gets out of high school, he's drafted, he goes to Stanford, he's drafted by the Cardinals. The kid's like 6'4", 220.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, Tom, that, you know, at 16, they're the most physically mature in around, but by the time you get to 18, 19, 20, they are no, you know, other guys catch up. That's real normal. There's lots of guys just, you know, as I think of the football experience back in the day, the best guys on the freshman team weren't necessarily the best guys on the varsity a few years later. In fact, I'll give you a different example, because I just had this conversation with a local writer last night at the Notre Dame game, and I said, you know, out of the freshmen that are on their team, and they have really good freshmen on the Irish team, I said, I think Dane Goodwin will probably have the best freshman year, but I don't think he'll be the best of that group on by the time they're juniors. That'll be, you know, Prentice Hubb and Nate Leshefsky.
Wasn't the story, and unfortunately the fellow just died, Orlando Woolridge, and he played with Michael Jordan back in the day when they used to, what did they used to call that, Kevin? And why can't you do it anymore? Where you, when the man-to-man defense, where you take the three guys and put them over on the one side and you essentially played a two-on-two game? What they used to call that? It was isolation something something.
2-on-2 game.
Well,
2-man game.
Two-man
game, pick and roll.
But why? But I mean, the you had to stay within a couple of feet of your man on defense.
Yeah, so because it was so illegal. They wanted you to play a real man-to-man defense at the time.
So I would say that the two best guys I ever saw in that were the Big O and who could drive like a mother, and Jordan. They killed everybody in it until then. All of a sudden, you could actually leave your man, and everybody stopped doing that because it became essentially 2-on-2 basketball when it's supposed to be 5-on-5. But anyway, didn't he get recruited as a guard and grew like 3.5 inches the summer before he got there or something? And all of a sudden,
I don't remember that, but I'm not saying you're wrong either. Scottie Pippen was the same thing. He grew, from like 6'2 to 6'7. All of a sudden, so that's why he was at Central Arkansas, because he was so small.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he wasn't so small.
6'2" forward. We were talking about that because Notre Dame played Chicago State. I was talking about that with a guy in the.
All right, Kevin, hold that thought, buddy. Yes,
Chicago State gets those guys who are like the 5'7" guards and the 6'4" power forwards in high school.
6'4" power forwards like me, huh? SP that can't jump. SP Futures down 16. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Jay-Z on the board. Come back a little bit here. SP Futures only down 1350. Dow Futures down 110. NASDAQ Futures down 54. We were actually worse than that earlier. Kevin, we were We'd remiss a little bit if we didn't mention one of our best friends from school. Actually know some people who were killed in that nightclub. It was a nasty article we heard from our friend Dave, wasn't it? The father of one of the kids who plays football at the high school he coached, and his daughter's now the AD at. And I guess he knew the law enforcement guy who got killed. I mean, it's close to home. I didn't realize California is such a big state. When you hear something happening out there, and you have friends in California, you never dream they're like close to it because the place is so friggin' big. But it happens, Kevin. And I'm curious as to why. Didn't one of our buddies send us a missive? We have a lot of stuff going on. We have a pretty bright group from college, and they're into a lot of different things, and they share stuff just like the listeners do to us here. Stacks and Jackson. There used to be 450,000, 500,000 people in, I'll use the term, mental institutions. I don't know what you call them now.
Yeah, institutionalized.
And now there's,
for whatever reason.
Now there's 45,000. And if you talk to Tom Dart, who's the sheriff of Cook County, he'll tell you that all those people are just now in county jail. They're out, they do something, and they'll get sentenced, whether it's, you know, hanging around in somebody's doorway or something, and somebody will finally sentence them to 90 days in jail, they get them off the street, and they're basically in jail, and they're not criminals, they're just not, you know. And we have these wars. I think I don't see it that much, Kevin, because fortunately or unfortunately, it's just a fact, Jack. There's only 11% of the armed forces now come from the big cities, or something ridiculously small like that.
But 11% or what? I'm sorry.
Of the armed forces come from the big cities. I mean, I read that, or 12%. Something. I mean, it's not like it's a general draft like it was. Even then, it wasn't. You could always buy your way out of it, from what I understand. Not in Vietnam necessarily, but before that, you could. But I mean, I don't really. We don't in Chicago. You don't really run into people. Unless it was, you know, somebody's kid who went to one of the academies or something. You don't really run into people who generally that have fought in any of these wars in the last 20 years. But if you go to Columbus, Ohio, and you read the newspaper on Sunday, there's people going back and forth all the time, Kevin, because every one of these...
You come here, I can't begin to count the number of veterans I know who did active duty tours in the Middle East.
I was just going to say, I bet your area is the same.
In Iraq.
I bet your area is the same, but in the city of Chicago, I don't see one old armory like they used to have. You know, they're all torn down. Where, you know, people, well, there's one up by Ford City because Thomas was in the reserves there, and I don't know if those guys ever had to go. And I'm going to say isn't there an air tanker wing at O'Hare, and I think they had to go for a while, didn't they? But there's some, but it's not like if you get the Columbus paper in the area by you. Virtually all these little towns have something. There's a mechanics wing, there's something, and all those people go back and forth. I mean, you don't really see that in Chicago or in New York. And that's why I don't think it's part of the news, Kevin. I think there's a real lot of people around that have problems from being over there. Like you and I used to know the people from Vietnam that came back and had nothing but problems. And they weren't taken care of very well either, by the way. I remember reading 2 years into the war, somebody anticipated the Iraq war. This is not even counting Afghanistan. If you counted the war itself, the munitions, the people, and you dropped in the people who got wounded that were going to get paid something for disability for the rest of their life, people who weren't necessarily wounded but had some mental problems, or people that had, when they got older, could go into a veterans institution that couldn't have before. The guy had it at like $1.5 trillion. This is 20 years ago, Kevin. It could only have gone up. I mean, the cost of these things are dramatic. And when you just say, well, we're not going to help all these people and hope they all fend for themselves, then you got a real problem. I mean, how many of these guys out there are it's really hard to get back in society. If you're from a small town in Ohio and you happen to be a mechanic, I guess it's relatively easy for you to go back to the small town and be the mechanic you were when you left. I don't know about other people. I mean, I don't think you say that for everybody.
Tom, I don't know that it is that easy. I
said easier. I didn't say
at any level, no matter where you are. You know, PTSD is really, really common We understand it now. It had to be there all along. It wasn't, you know, it's not just, you know, it goes, you know, World War II. You know, there had to be people that had to deal with stuff. And, you know, in the past,
it was called battle fatigue.
Generally a suck it up and, and, you know, and move on with your life attitude. But that, you know, that didn't really deal with it. You probably had a ton of alcoholism and Vietnam and a lot of drug addiction and so on, because that's what happens when you don't deal with things. You know, when you just kind of stuff them down. That's real common. If you've known recovering alcoholics, and I'm pretty sure you have, that, you know, the whole thing is learning how to deal with, the things that are, you know, front and center in your life rather than just ignore them.
Well, I think in World War II there was no PT, whatever it is. They used to call it battle fatigue. Same thing, gotta be.
Sure, but yeah, but you get the idea. It's,
yeah,
you know, now it's we're upfront about it, but we're still not dealing with it. We just know what it is now.
I have to believe that.
Now, you know, there are areas, pockets where the VA is effective and where there's really, really active veterans groups. You know, working. Outside of the government structure and working to, you know, to assist each other. So I'm very aware of that, too.
Well, I think that there needs to, I have to believe that with so many people coming back at the same time in World War II, that there had to be, a little bit more, I won't say camaraderie, but it was, I don't know. I mean, the VFWs popped up, a lot of things popped up. I had to believe that the synergies between all the people coming back at the same time were maybe a little, nothing could be worse than the Vietnam people coming back, and everybody here didn't even like them because they said they like lost and they wouldn't let them in the VFWs and because it wasn't a declared war. But I don't know if it was anything more brutal for those dudes. I mean, the guys now, I mean, if you lost a leg, you lost a leg. I mean, it's a bad doing. And if you have mental issues because of it or your hearing problems or you name it, I mean, it's about as bad as it gets. But I don't know that anybody took it on the chin like the Vietnam people. I hope not.
Because they came back and they didn't get welcomed. They didn't get standing ovations at the basketball games and hockey games and all that kind of stuff. They got, you know, they got protested themselves personally. People yelling baby killers at them and all that kind of
stuff. Oh, I know. Yeah, it was,
we as a country treated them like crap.
Yeah, we sent them there and then we treated them like
crap. and this is why you hear, you know, even though whether it's true or not, why you hear so many people say, "Well, I support the troops, I just don't support the war," is, you know, there's a real awareness now of how badly we treated the people who served in the 60s and 70s.
And those were our guys. All right, Kevin, let's switch over to sports. We only got a couple minutes. What is it? How beautiful is this night game going to be tomorrow in South Bend? 25 degrees and swirling winds.
Well, the Irish are going to have to play without their starting quarterback, probably.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you know, Florida State is a bad football team. They're not a particularly intelligent football team. I don't mean that as individual guys. I just mean that I've seen them on TV a few times, and they do a lot of dumb stuff on the field. And they're, you know, I think, you know, they're here, it's cold, they're out of element, they're not having a good season at all, they're not a good football team, and if the Irish pounce on them early, I think they'll spit out the bit, to use a favorite expression of our old buddy Bob Golden.
Yes, I think you're probably right. I mean, the way these scheduling things go, why make this a night game, for God's sake? Doesn't anybody know what it's like in November in South Bend?
Yeah, bad idea. They probably figured it would be a really good feature game back at the beginning of the year when they scheduled it, but it's not.
Why are they so bad? They get so many good recruits every year.
Well, they're talented, and that's what I mean. You got to put them away early, because if you leave them in the game, then talent might prevail. So, you know, why are they so bad? I don't think they're well coached. I don't know much about their head coach, Willie Taggart, but I think things were starting to fall apart somewhat under Jimbo Fisher anyway, which has got to have the Texas A&M people saying, "What have we done?"
Oh, yeah. Well, Kevin, we'll talk about it next week. Buddy, have a good weekend. SP Futures down 14, Dow Futures down 110. Come back, we should have Mr. Helsner, Professor Helsner.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Miss Jay-Z on the board. S&P Futures down 14 now. We've got Dow Futures down 131, and we've got NASDAQ Futures down 59. Actually, Dow's only down 115, so we're coming back some here. We'll see. The market is going to react to whatever's going on. We seem to have a little problem getting Mr. Hal Star, but we'll probably get him in a second. Jay-Z is always good at this. In the meantime, we'll talk a little bit more about the some of these, the dangers in some of the numbers, the thing that the Fed is doing. I don't really not jealous of Jay Powell and his job he's got there now. It's pretty darn tough. I mean, because he's moving into an area where an awful lot of people don't even understand what he's doing or why. But because it's one of those situations where if he starts going from 2.25 to 2.5, the people who are used to seeing interest rates at, you know, 1 or 3/4 or 0.5 are going, my God, what's he doing? And yet, and when you look at a deficit that we're pushing $21 trillion or over $21 trillion, and now we're talking about some years coming forward where we're going to be over $1 trillion like this year in an economy that everybody thinks is really good, which is not really what you would expect normally. I mean, I'm just talking generally how things don't necessarily match up, and somehow they're going to have to match up, or they're not going to have to match up, and with various dangers to each, every which way it doesn't match. So if you push through, you know, a middle class tax cut or something, which I don't think is going to happen with the Democrats in the House, but, you know, but maybe, because those of you who don't know, all revenue bills have to originate in the House. That's in the Constitution. So the House really does have the power of the purse more so than the Senate, which isn't to say that the parties from one side or the other can't start one up. I mean, they can, but by and large, they're supposed to start from the House. So you've got, you know, a situation with what if some of the numbers I keep throwing out at people, probably that they don't really want to hear, some of the inflation numbers, what if they really are that high? And one of these days we get a CPI number that comes in at 1% or 1.25 or 0.75 2 months in a row or something. All of a sudden people are going to sit there and go, you know, what the bleep? And if the interest rates that you have to push in there to essentially slow an economy down, it's got too much money in it, you have to start pulling money out of the system pretty darn fast. And if that happens with the deficit we have, I mean, every 1% interest rate that the federal government has to spend, or the states, and we were talking, you know, 1% of $221 trillion is $210 billion. I mean, the math is right there. So if you went to the extreme and said that our rate is going to go to 10%, which I hope and pray it never does, if it goes to 10%, we're talking about almost, we're almost talking about $1 trillion a year to pay just in interest, much less any deficit we might have. Now, you get some of that back because the people you're paying interest to are gonna pay income taxes on the interest. So you're gonna get, let's say, 30% of it back. So it's not all lost, but a lot of it is. And if you start running interest rates up that high, the economy is probably not going to be so hot either. So these are things that you really need to make sure never happen. And we're walking right on that edge. And I don't quite understand why. I mean, the part of it is just too good to be true. I mean, we have asset prices going up because we ran the interest rates all the way down. I mean, I know that's sort of like man in heaven. You don't want to be, God anyway. It's probably a bad job. But if you were, you know, people would be bitching a blue streak the day you're cutting the manna from heaven off. And I said, no, things are back to normal. Grow your own stuff. Nobody wants to hear that. You'd rather be able to walk outside the tent and just grab the stuff, like allegedly in the Bible. We want the interest rates down there. We want... These companies want to continue to borrow at 3.5% and buy their stock back. Stupid idea. Shouldn't be able to be done. I mean, and you've got this revaluation. Nobody wants the population to lose 15-20% in all their long-term bonds. I mean, you don't want that to happen. I mean, and can you imagine in Europe if all of a sudden those bonds that came out at, let's say, zero interest rate or 0.1 or even negative interest rates, What if it go to 5%? I mean, the darn things are going to be trading, you know, whatever. I mean, when I started, the 30-year bond was, I think it was an 8.5% coupon. It was a signature bond. For those that don't, Jay-Z, if you're ever in a bond class, just because there's a bond future, doesn't mean that that's the only one you can deliver at the Board of Trade. As a member of the Board of Trade, I used to get a huge list every month. Maybe it was every quarter, of all these different bonds that you could deliver instead of the one 30-year bond. But if you go on their site, the 30-year band that's being traded is there's one band that's the key band. It's like corn. Is it number two red or something is the deliverable corn. Now if you deliver something better, you get a credit. If you get something worse, I think they charge you. So there's more to this than meets the eye. But anyway, the band that was traded was an 8.5% band. I think that was 30 years out, and the darn thing was trading 65 cents on a dollar. So you're talking about a 12.5-13% rate on that band, market rate to you. I mean, for those that maybe when you never, I won't say never, you very very rarely do you ever pay 100 cents on a dollar for a band. Very rarely. Even when they come out, if you say the interest rate today is 3.56, okay, and we're gonna put this band out 2 weeks from now, so the market rate is whatever, I guarantee you that by next week the rate will not be 3.56, it'll be 5.4, it'll be 5.7, it'll be 5.9, which means that you're either gonna market price that day the $100 you plan on paying for that band, you're probably going to be paying $99.97, or you're going to be paying $100.04 or something like that. Because you're going to be paying the price at that day. So it never really trades, when you right at the 100. If it does, that's the rare event. But, so, we're really not set up right now for people for everybody to go home, all the new people who just won the representative districts to go home and say, hey, my mom's got this band she paid 110 for and the thing's trading 90, what the bleep? I mean, she's gonna get her money, okay, hope she's gonna get her money, she's not a bad company or a junk band thing or something. But if you're in the U.S. government, I mean, as much as I may seem like I'm a glass half empty guy, which I try not to be, I gotta believe everybody's gonna get paid their U.S. stuff. I mean, we put people in bands here every week, PTI or notes or whatever, we go to the auction. I mean, I never once have told somebody, by the way, you're not gonna get paid by the federal government, and hopefully I never will, or never even think that I should mention that, because I think we're okay. Although, every year I start to wonder. So, you go to those auctions, but you could very easily, if you buy a 30-year band, you could pay 100 cents on a dollar and have a thing trading at 85 a year from now, which is not what anybody wants to have happen. We have Fari. Really? Fari, how are you, buddy, on a Friday?
Good morning, sir. I'm good. How are you?
All right. What's going on? What's with the market going south here?
I've lost you for a second. Speak up a little bit.
What's with the market going south here?
Hold on.
I can hear you.
Can you hear me better?
I can hear you fine.
I'm good. Just catching up on overnight news, and I'm good.
What is the what's the overnight news that's fit to print other than we're down?
Well, you know, this is a Friday, so first Friday after all this stuff. There's talk of some seal of indictments. There's a talk of Don Jr. left for France in a hurry. So maybe that's pressing it down. We didn't lose much yesterday with the Fed, but so far, I guess, I think 6 out of 7, I guess, or 8 out of 9 of, or 7 out of 8, I'm sorry, 7 out of 8 have been losers on the day of FOMC meeting. So they kept up that. We're down, what, 12 now and 51. I'm just getting to my desk, by the way, but
why do you,
I'll tell you what I can, sir.
Why do you, I don't know if there's an answer to this. Why does it seem to me that every single time the Janet Yellen Fed opened their mouth, regardless, we went up, and now this poor guy, every time he opens his mouth, we go down?
Maybe we were in the market also.
Well, it is a little bit different.
I mean, listen, people sell because they wanted to sell. They were just looking for an excuse.
Yeah, I suppose.
Not all, but some.
Well, it just seems, I mean, I don't know, he's pretty much got the same plan. He's not doing anything different than
Yellen said
they were going to do.
I mean, he's actually following the plan that was probably set in by Bernanke to begin with, because he's the one who loaded up the balance sheet, and as astute as he is, he probably had an exit plan just like anybody experienced in this matters, including trading. You know, you get into a trade, I always tell my people, my flock, that, hey, Here's a tip when I get in, but if you don't have an exit plan, maybe you ought to be sipping on that coffee and just watch this trade rather than jumping in, because you got to go in with an exit plan. Now imagine adding six or nine zeros to that when it comes to Fed. So all other things being equal, I would think before his departure, the great Bernanke put down some markers and said, this is what I see it. You adjust as needed, Dr. Yellen, but here's would be my suggestion and my roadmap. As we cherish ourselves in our institutions to have a kind of a collaborative transition from one baton holder to the next.
What I have a question for you. My brother Dan watches the balance sheet that they're supposed to be dropping down.
Right.
And they didn't for like 3 weeks. And all of a sudden last week they dropped it down quite a bit, which is a little strange. It seems like their orderly, shall we say, dropping down is not as orderly as they would say. Or maybe the numbers...
Was it a roll-off?
No, just... I'll try and get the graph up here. But the my question is, we went from, way maybe before you were even here, when the savings and loans essentially held, let's put it this way, the people in the neighborhoods, and that could be an expansive number, it could be the neighborhood, could be the state, for God's sake.
Right.
The people in the hoods essentially held the mortgage paper for the other people in the hood, for lack of a better term. I mean, I know that's a sloppy, but basically they did, right? I mean, everybody put all their money in First Federal or Concordia or Evergreen Park Savings and Loan, and they gave 85% of the money had to be used for mortgages, pretty much in that area, right? So that's what they did. Now you have the stuff is all over the place, and the Fed had to go out and essentially bail all these guys out. So they've got a $4 trillion balance sheet, but they also have $1.8 trillion of that is mortgages, correct?
It is up there, yes, quite a bit. As a matter of fact, you'd see the rate rise by maturity, not duration, by maturity, is much faster on the lower end as vis-a-vis the longer end. That's because it's just holding so much, and it's been very, very unusual. You know, the New York Fed, by the way, publishes all of that. New York Fed reports all the holding, because that's the head of the operations for Fed, by CUSIP number. And you would see, and I haven't been there recently, but so there's going to be some effect of a roll-off that after the last QE was expired, in some positions, the Fed is a 70%, and I think not by statute, but by some sort of internal rule, I think it is, that's what they respect, that they try not to cross over. 70% of that CUSIP.
Yeah, and the guys in Europe,
like a major shareholder for that CUSIP. It's incredible.
I think
so they go on and on and on and on, just pages and pages and pages as you roll up the page of the browser.
Well, that's the whole. I'll use the term idiocy. Imagine this, Jay-Z. If we elect Fari president, nobody would give you or Congress the ability to just, if you felt like spending money, go downstairs to the basement and run off a few Benjamins and spend it, right? I mean, you would never give the people in office the ability to just create cash and spend it.
Yeah, no way.
I mean, you wouldn't. That's not something you would give your elected politicians. So we've got this contrived thing here where we don't do that. The Fed does it. So the Treasury, if they actually want to borrow money and spend more than they have, they have to go out into the population, and they have to go to Jay-Z. You need to buy a $50 savings bond. You know, go back to pre-war times. And so Jay-Z loans the government $50, and they pay her interest. That's how the quote Treasury is supposed to. They don't have the ability to create money, but now they've got the central bank that's allegedly independent, which is the biggest bunch of BS I've ever come across, because they're political animals like everybody else. So what they end up doing, they create the money and they come out and buy the thing for $50, and they say it's on their balance sheet, but it's not the Treasury, so it's okay. So, and yet they're paying commissions on both sides to make it even worse. So it becomes a two-step process to get you to the same place, right?
Correct.
When, but now the issue comes down to, and this mortgage stuff, when I went back to the savings and loan, let's say $1.8 trillion, $2 trillion of the 4 point something they have, look at the number right now, 4.173 is their balance sheet, $1 trillion. If they get out of the mortgage game totally, and we don't have any savings and loans anymore, who the hell's going to hold all this paper? I mean, if the Fed's not owning,
it's going to go back to a shadow banking system again.
So we just
depending on how the investors are and how they're comfortable. I mean, in theory, okay, Fannie Mae and Freddie did not hold all these papers.
No, they just guaranteed it.
They were backing it. They were financing it short term. But we had some long term players as investors in that realm. For example, jumbo loans. You go out there for jumbo loans. Government was not really in there for a very long duration. So some of that will come back. Now, I'm a little bit rusty because of the market has dramatically changed since both the 2008-2009 and Frank Dodd. So, or Dodd-Frank, I should say, Dodd-Frank. So, you know, who would emerge there, I think, is something worth watching. But one day the current regime will end. It has to. They're not going to go out there and buy it. Now, if the economy is moving, they have no validity to go out there and do another QE. No need to. A. B. The current paper will hit maturity at some cycle.
Well, that's what is not, I don't think, is well known, and it's not, I mean, the amount of it, I mean, I probably could wiggle it out of my Fed guys one night if I bought them too many drinks.
Right.
But they're pretty closed mouth about these kinds of things. There's probably, I'm going to say, these guys have had this mortgage there for 5-6 years, right?
And they, a little bit more than that.
Okay. Well, they started.
But we got to see when they start really coming out with the need for QEs. They start accumulating. Remember?
Okay. Where I'm getting too far, and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm saying that if these guys went out over a period of 2 years, they bought $1.8 trillion from the banks in mortgages, okay, mortgage obligations, which they did. What they paid for them, they won't tell you. I think they paid too friggin' high, and the people got booted out of their houses, and the banks.
Well, and their excuse is, I call it an excuse. Hey, mission to save the banks.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a corporate handout, really, but buried in. We try to mark these to current prices or fair prices, given the situation we were in. And we were the only buyer of a last resort of that size.
Well, but they...
So, here's our mark.
Okay, but...
Remember long-term capital?
Right, but let's not... I mean, I don't want to... I've been through this before, and I'd be happy to do it again, because it pisses me off, to be honest with you. But they let the...
Well, Jay-Z, do you have his blood pressure pills nearby?
Yeah, right. I mean,
shall we order an IV?
Let's just say we could have done it in a way of helping the homeowner and helping the bank, and we decided not to do that.
We decided not to help the homeowner at all.
Yeah,
yeah. Look at just the number of FTC complaints on the remortgaging and the workouts. Just by some of the greatest banks, including Chase, and of course Wells Fargo.
Well, those guys,
and the big one probably, I don't know how much exposure it got, was, I think probably the biggest one was out there.
Well, I mean, you wonder how Jamie Dimon, who I actually kind of like, I mean, how he can maintain that smirk on his face with both hands out. You know, it must be hard to keep the balance going.
So, well, you know, you got to realize also, and all due respect, I still think it's one of the better guys in there, in that neighborhood.
I do too.
Because none of them, because we never got anything done with them. We never took them anywhere.
No.
We didn't take them to court, nothing, okay? But you got to also realize, he got impregnated, pardon my French, in the 17th of March, 2008, that was a Monday, when they gave him, or Paulson, put a gun to his head and said, thou shalt buy this at $2, and we'll give you some guarantee, but it was the first one. When the first one comes in, you don't know how bad it smells. It's the first bad fish.
Yeah.
Okay. as it sit there and staled when the rest of the economy unwinded and the mortgage market just evaporated and the short-term Fed funds froze, where you couldn't do not Fed funds, what do you call it? The overnight interbank lending. All that froze.
There's the Fed funds.
But it's been, okay. Yeah. Short-term froze where nobody could, and you know, you had the reserve, what do you call it, the money, what do you call it, you know, the excess cash you would keep in your account, and they would keep in these accounts, I forgot what it was called, but Fidelity had it and so forth. When those were below par, they dropped below par, imagine what he went through. He was put a gun to his head. They said, listen, you know, you put in $1 billion, we do a backstop on the back of it. But that was Bear Stearns. And one could argue, of all the portfolios, Bear Stearns was as bad or worse than Lehman. Why? They were the first one to go down.
They also had the...
In a good area. If you look at the area where we were in the marketplace, and the price, average price of the housing...
Fari, we have a client who obviously will go nameless. We have a client who obviously will go nameless.
Okay, of course,
That in 2007, the first hint of anything happening.
Right.
And it's not up to me to talk to people and find out details of stuff. I mean, you know, I'm not trying not to be nosy to clients. And,
right, of course.
The guy lost. He was in one of these Bear Stearns funds.
Right.
2007. This is 6 months before anybody had any problem.
Right.
And the fund went out, and he lost $1 million.
Wow.
And it was it was an off balance sheet. But here's my two points I'm trying to make here, not very well. For the Fed to maintain this $1.8 trillion, if you thought about it, you'd understand it, I think. But nobody thinks about it. The idea is QE is over, but it's not over because houses. People live in houses an average of 5 or 6 years. So if the Fed does nothing, these things are going to drain off like a mother, right? So they today are out buying more mortgages, just to make, because they're probably going to get, pick a number, 1,000 of them redeemed today, and they don't want their balance sheet coming off that fast. They're going to have to go out and buy 900 more.
Wouldn't they need to disclose that?
Well, they are. They're maintaining. If you were to say, by the way, have you bought a mortgage in the last month? They're going to say, yeah. Otherwise, it's going to roll off too fast. To give you an example, my stepfather was a very clever fellow. He bought. It wasn't Fannie or Freddie. Is there one for the Armed Forces guys where they did mortgages for Armed Forces? Something like that.
But he
sends them, I don't know what he sent them at the time, 40, 50 grand or something, into a mortgage pool.
Right.
And he was part of this mortgage pool. And every month, he'd get his interest, and he'd always get a little more than the interest. Because say there was 1,000 mortgages in there, two guys or two families would move somewhere else, and they paid a mortgage off. So he gets to the end, and the checks are like $5. Because it was nowhere near the 20 years that it was supposed to be. It was like maybe the 16th year. There was like one guy left. Finally, he redeemed his, and he got the check for the $5. So it drains out pretty fast. So today, or this week, the Fed is out buying mortgages. So my question to you is, we've got a couple of minutes, is we, meaning Volcker, essentially trashed the savings loan industry, really without regard to what was going to replace it. So then you get this Fannie and Freddie, and they start guaranteeing stuff, and the money comes flying from overseas, and people are doing the ARB, and all of a sudden this thing blows up because the leverage is dramatic. Well, that wasn't the answer either. So now we got Fannie and Freddie as these ghost places. We got the Fed still sort of buying stuff. Now, when this all goes away in 4 or 5 years, is there something to replace? Is there a future mortgage system in this country? I'm thinking the answer is no.
The stable one would be your local bank.
Yeah.
The local banks are not set up to handle the volume of the business we're doing in mortgages.
Well, you would have something where the local bank could sell pieces of the mortgage into the risk pool, but would retain some of it and retain the control of the servicing, you would think. Some combination of that.
You got to realize one thing. Right now, we have no refinancing.
No.
It's not really there. What's happening are purchases. So rates are rising.
Right.
Okay. So if you had a stress test set up here for mortgages or a mortgage company or somebody who's going to be sanctioned or these shadow banking firms, it's not just how can they handle the business now. I do believe rates are going to rise for a while, by the way.
I don't think rates
are going to flatten out or drop for a while. I just don't see that in the works. The economy is getting better. There's a demand there's a demand for more borrowing, and the government, by definition, this is money and banking 101, will crowd out the corporate market and the consumer market because it's a better credit rating. So I think the rates are just going to rise.
They're
going to rise
for a while. Fire, we got a dash, buddy. We'll have you back on the usual. We'll talk about this next week. What do you think?
You got it. Thank you, sir.
All right, take care, buddy. The SP Futures not only down 1150, Dow Futures down 104. Back, Mr. John Neal. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do at PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Oshie. It's Jay Z on the board. SP Futures down 15. Futures down 130. NASDAQ Futures down 61. We said a big, I've been kind of predicting this for a while. Who knows? It might just be a 1 month or those, so don't take it to the bank. PPI, 0.6. versus 0.2 estimated. That's the biggest number since 2012. I've been sort of thinking that was going to happen one of these days along here, but it doesn't seem to be taking the bonds much. It doesn't seem to be moving gold, so everybody's looking at it as a one-month phenomenon right now. DAX down 42.4%, FTSE down 49.7%, CAC around down 33.7%. So down, but not huge over in Europe. Nikkei down 236, that's a whole 1%, 22,250. Shanghai down 36, 1.4%, under 2,600, 2,598. Hang Seng down 625, that's 2.4%. They're the big losers this morning so far. They're not only under the 26,000-hour number, they're almost under the 25,601, so that's a big drop. Oil down 94 cents, 59.73. Doesn't look like it's going to hold 60, even trying to, but so far not so good. Brent down 86. Natural gas up another 11 cents, 3.65. RBOB down 2 cents, so, boy, this is one of these years you want to hope you're being heated by heating oil, not gas. I said gold not going anywhere with the PPI number, CPI number. Still down 7.50, silver down 14 cents. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Crummy weather, it's snowing. It's too early for this.
It's not too early. It's the perfect time.
Ah.
The Christmas music is on the radio, therefore it is time for snow.
Ah, okay.
Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:36. Chicago's high is 36 with a low of 23. Expect snow flurries all day. Phoenix is clear and sunny with a high of 79 and a low of 56. Last night, the Steelers beat the Panthers 52-21 in Thursday Night Football.
Yay!
Woohoo, yeah. In basketball, Bulls were off and the Suns were beat by the Celtics 116-109. Hurricanes beat the Blackhawks 4-3 and the Flyers beat the Coyotes 5-4. Surprisingly, there are no accidents as of yet with this first snowfall. However, we will see how that holds up. Nothing else to report. Back to you.
So, Jan, remember when Jay-Z first got here and he'd say stuff like it was too early to snow, and she'd say, you're right, Chief. No, we don't have any more of that. No, it is the perfect time to snow. What's the matter with you? You know?
So you got snowed this morning?
Yeah, we were, it's miserable. It's gonna be, the Irish are playing, Florida State tomorrow night. I was talking to my buddies at the club yesterday. Somebody offered him $200-$300 tickets, and he goes, nah. Not a chance. Game so time.
To sit out in that snow. And,
25 swirling winds, you know. Not good.
But you know what? That's the way football should be played, in my opinion, instead of in these domes and stuff.
Well, I don't mind the outdoor part, but what's the most miserable you ever were to football? I used to go every year to my cousin had tickets, and he would always go, no matter what. He's one of these guys I paid for him, and he always had his business people to go with on the nice days. And I would get the call on the crummy day, and I would never let him sit out there by himself, like when the kids even wouldn't even go with him. So I would always go. And what's your view of the world's worst day, Jay-Z's? I'll get your opinion as well. In terms of weather. All right, don't all speak up at once.
I don't know.
Okay, well I'll go first then. My days in Pittsburgh, I remember the snow of 75 where, you know, it came, you know, higher than the doors and, you know, and things like that. And that whole year to go to, you know, any of the, you know, winter sports events, it was hard to get out all the way around.
Well,
I can just remember my father having to just dig this, I mean, forget about driving, of course, but just dig something just to get out of the house. I mean, we were prepared for it, but just so you don't kind of feel so claustrophobic, if you will. That was all really on.
Oh, yeah, you can't just have the stuff up at your door.
Several days.
I'm going to say that I've been through, the lowest I probably was like 4 below 0 or something. I wasn't in like the frost bowl like in Green Bay. But I'm going to say one day we went, it was like 34 degrees with a wind and this rain and slush would just stick to you. I think that was worse than 4 below. Because
you get the even worse with the wind chill factor, you know, coming off the lake and all that. And I remember that when it would, you know, with certain days, makes such a huge difference when that wind chill factor, you know, would come into effect.
And the poor guys,
so biting no matter what you wore, you know.
Plus the poor guys that are playing, they're out in the middle of the field. Most of them are in short sleeves. And then you get a commercial and they're standing out there. It's one thing if you keep playing. I mean, when we were kids in the snow, we would always be out playing in that kind of weather. You know, we have a question, Jay-Z. What's the question?
David Parks tweeted in and asked John to give us an update on the Arizona election recounts.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you that too, John. Dave beat me to it. What's going on? Why have they not declared somebody?
They were pretty close in that Senate race, so they had the election, not committee, but what's called the who's in charge of that post. They have to go through that, and it's just too close to count right now.
Is there an inordinate amount of absentee ballots or anything that they're worried about?
There's an awful lot of absentee ballots here. Very, very common way. You'll see more people. You'll see very few lines because you'll see more people are going this vote by mail thing. I don't know. Are you guys allowed to do the vote by mail thing?
No. We had a lot of pre.
Do it out there?
No, we had a lot of pre-voting, but you have to go to a place to do it. But we don't have. I mean, when I say absentee ballots, I'm showing my age here, but. That used to mean like service people overseas,
right,
and so forth. There's not a whole lot of people overseas. Well, there's going to be some, but percentage wise, I'm going to bet there's more people in Arizona in that group than in Illinois.
Right. Well, we got quite a few bases and things like that. But anybody, if you want to, you can vote that way, and a lot of people are choosing to vote that way, and. So it's kind of thrown a little fly in the ointment, just the efficiency of that now, calls into question certain things. So we'll see as they, I don't want to say investigate this thing, but as they delve into this to, get a resolution to it.
Well, David and I joust back and forth on emails a lot, and he's a terrific guy. David, I think, and maybe since you're listening, obviously you are, I'm going to say most states on the absentee stuff, I heard this the other day, and I had never heard of it before. If your letter is postmarked the day before the election, and say it's coming from Afghanistan, it's got to get counted. I mean, it might not be here for 2-3 days. I mean, if it gets that close, you pretty much have to wait for all that stuff to come in, don't you, Jen? I mean, normally,
it says on there that it has to be received by the date, but. I used to think that was the case, Tom. And I looked at my, because I mail in mine, to be honest with you. And I looked at mine just out of curiosity of what you're saying there. And it said that it has to be received by them, but I think it's a pretty slippery slope. And I think postmark, you're probably right when it push comes to shove.
One of the states, it might have been the Florida governor's race or whatever, it's the same way. One of the states, they were saying on the TV I was watching, that they said it hit, as long as it was postmarked the day before, it had to be counted. It wasn't when it was received. Because it's
right.
Because how do you know when it's going to get received with our post office?
Well, that's exactly it. And I think it, how they stated it on my materials here is just to get people, to mail it early, you follow me? So, but
right.
You're right. As close as this one was, I mean, that's, where this is going to be at. So, with these kind of questions and things like that, and so who knows? So we're under the microscope again to a certain extent.
Right now, the Republicans allegedly ahead by 1,000 votes or something, right?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, which is nothing. Yeah,
it's pretty close. I mean,
yeah.
So, John, explain to me, since we're loaded up in gold and silver, and we just got another spread on yesterday, explain to me how the 0.6 CPI number this morning doesn't have gold and silver turning around from being down to being up 20 bucks, and yet it's not.
Yeah, it was exactly. When I started looking at certain things, I figured it'd be way up. I was surprised like yesterday that there wasn't a down move yesterday. So it's almost doing the opposite of what I think it should do on these given days. But yeah, very surprising. It looks like actually pretty substantial move down today. So
yeah, and I did my spreads out a couple of weeks, so I got time, but it's not exactly going the right way. I mean, what the hell, over? I mean, we get inflation now, it's popping out, we can't even lie about it. I don't know if you're listening earlier, but I was for those that might have been listening at the beginning of the show, I do this really crazy stuff every once in a while, John, and once I get started, I can't stop. I mean, this is bad. I started looking at some of the inflation numbers going back, and I'm going to go through real briefly because people, beginning of the show,
sure.
Somehow I stumbled on this University of Missouri site. They've got all kinds of data on wages and stuff every single year. Carpenters, engineers, elevator. I mean, in a, I don't know who put this together, but it's spectacular. I was going to ask our friend, Mr. or Professor Snar, but he couldn't make it and call it in. We'll get him next week. And how, you know, what kind of university money it takes to get all this together. I know University of Chicago used to have data for every, they put together every up or down tick of like every stock in the New York Stock Exchange going back like 100 years. That's when I was there, 1975. And Notre Dame's doing the same thing now. We're using option markets and everything else. I mean, the storage of data is cheaper, but, man, it's got to be a frig of a lot of work. I mean, to put all this stuff together. But one of those, for those who didn't hear earlier, you know what the, and back in, this is the raises people were getting during the inflation era. Carpenter, July 1st, 1976, made $10 an hour. The next year, they were making $11.55. Now, everybody's didn't go up that much. Cement mason was $10.08 and went to $10.69. But guess what the insurance contribution per hour was in those days, Jen, compared to what it is now?
I have no idea.
75 cents an hour. So, essentially, wow. $120 paid for all the insurance for, you know, okay. Carpenter and family. And I put that in the CPI indicator, and it came out to be 475. And so I got to believe that virtually everybody, if it's a family now, you're insuring them, you're well over a G. So it's not even close to, you know, the number that it ought to be. And if you put this carpenter's wage in there, he'd be making $47 today. And I don't think he is.
No, not at all.
And then I went to, you and I always like to, shall we say, I was going to say rag at, but I shouldn't do that. I'll say, are concerned with how the Bureau of Labor Statistics comes up with some of their numbers. And one of the subjects that's near and dear to my heart, guess what they think the price of a pickup has gone up from 2000 to 2018 per year?
No idea.
Take your wildest guess.
How much it's gone up? I would say, from you talking about from the same date range, Tom?
From 2000 to 2018. Same truck.
I'm going to say $5,000.
They have that a truck cost $25,000 in 2000 and now costs $25,612.
Really?
And I'm going to say that since I bought one in 2000, you know, a nice tricked out one, extended cab, so it's, you know, maybe not quite the exact. I paid $29,500. Same truck today is $45,000. Now, where the hell do these guys get the $600?
Good point.
I mean, you could buy a Ford 150, two-wheel drive, stick shift, manufacturer's suggested retail price in 2000 was $12,700. No, just your basic pick-me-up. Get me around the farm.
Right.
Roll down windows the whole bit. I don't think you can touch a bare bones pickup today for less than $24,000, $25,000, maybe $22,000, something like that. But I haven't, I've never bought a two wheel drive, you know, stick shift jobby. I don't even have stick. Now I'm sure some of that they're going to say that, you know, there's improvements here, there, and all over the place. And I get that. There's probably a couple thousand hours worth of improvements in the truck. There's probably a backup camera. There's probably a computer. There's probably, you know, I'm going to say it probably isn't. You can't get a manual anymore. It's probably the automatic's in there, so you got to add $1,000 for the automatic. Whatever, I get all that. But these guys aren't even close on these numbers. You know, how do you make policy without getting any of the politics of it? How do you make policy when do they get the somebody in Washington? I'll say, and again, I don't want to. We've been talking politics all week. I don't want to do that today. If the president and Nancy Pelosi and somebody else sit in a room, can they get somebody from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and say, give me the real numbers and find out what they are? Or do they have to do the same thing I'm doing? I don't believe that. Let me go check it. Let me look at another source. I mean, I hate the hell to see that the president, if he was of a mind to, have to do the same thing I'm doing here to find a real number. I mean, do these guys...
Somebody and say, just give me the real number, exactly.
I guess it's, how can I put it in the vernacular? It's one thing for somebody to BS you. It's quite another for them not to know they're BSing you. I'm sure you know somebody in this world that every time they tell you they're going to be there at 10 o'clock, they're never there at 10 o'clock. And then you can finally look at them and say, Joe, when are you really going to be here? You have it right? Well, I mean, 10:30. Okay, fine. Why do you, you know what I'm saying? But do these guys even know they're this far off, or they don't care?
They don't care. I mean, you know, I didn't even need to think about that. They have to know, Tom. If, you know, if we know and many others know, they have to know.
Well, so how do we, how do we, you know, the XLE, I'm that mad we rolled the puts like absolute masters, Jan. We rolled them, we caught it down at 64, we ran the XLE to, when it touched 70, we rolled up to the 70 puts, now it's going back down again. But, I, when the thing ran up last week, I was reluctant to sell the calls, I didn't sell them. Dan sold all his, he made a real nice, he made a huge, terrific trade right on the high. And I didn't do mine. So I'm, you know, I'm fine with what I did do, but God, what a turnaround, huh? I mean, how come we didn't get that letter about all the countries that get to buy the stuff from Iran?
Right. Yeah, it didn't come to addressed in my office.
No. So now what do we think? We got oil under $60. We just roll the puts down, and 2 months from now, the thing will right back up like it has really for a couple of years. Every time it's gone between what, 72 and 64, the XLE, and we've made money on the movement every time.
Yep.
I don't know. Why do you suppose?
Well, I think it's going to be more of the same along those lines, Tom. You got to handle it as such. I mean, I think it's just going to do that again. It'll meander up. You know, be looking at, you know, the early 70s right in there, and that's definitely when you want to, you know, be selling all your calls and things like, you know, I mean, sell them obviously on the way up due to a certain extent, but, you know, I think if, you know, short order, we'll see that again, though, you know, 70, early 70s, somewhere now.
Well, John, I'm going to throw out a shameless plug because for a long period of time, when all we did was go straight up for 8 years, in retrospect, it's sort of like I didn't have a fire for 8 years. Could I get my fire insurance back? If you didn't have a fire, you're probably better off without fire insurance, assuming you could sleep well. I think we're entering an era, we're probably already in it, where the money to be made in the next 4 or 5 years is going to be in the hedge. It's going to be in the covered right. You're going to be making the money on the short calls, not on the long stock. Because I don't know that we're going to... I think we're not moving too far. I'm not saying we're going to crash. I don't think we are. Hope we aren't. But I have a feeling that in the next... We're going to be somewhat more volatile than we have been. And we're at the end of the day, we're not going to go too far, which means you're going to make money on rolling your put hedges, and you're going to make money on selling calls. That's my prediction for the next few years. Now, there's going to be some stacks.
Yeah, right. And I think you're right, because it's been some time now since I've really... it's a combination of using the technicals, you know, at least following them, but also it's been a long time since I've... you know, had to roll a call, or, you know, because I'm trapped in it, per se, you know, to use that vernacular. And I just haven't, had that issue. You know, I see it going to, you know, these patterns, and it kind of gets to that high point. I'm able to sell them, backs off a little bit. So, you know, worked out really, really good. And for the call side, of course. For the put side.
Well, for a year, for one or 2 years under the Obama administration, even though, of course, now nobody will say the market ever went up when Obama was in office, but it sure as hell did. That 1 year,
yes.
1 year you'd have a stock that was 77, you'd sell the 80 calls, and 2 days later, you're trying to roll to the 81s or 82s, and a week later, it's 90. I mean, you just got rolled over.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. You know, a lot easier to contend with, kind of what I call like a nice stair step up. You know, and then it takes a little while, and then the back off's relatively easy to handle too, you know, going the other way. So, yeah, it's been nice, actually.
Well, you know, the funny part, John, is I'm a little cold feet on it. I should have sold yesterday morning, and I didn't. I'm a little, well, I'm concerned on this oil thing, because I honestly do believe that with Venezuela out, and if Iran does, you know, the sanctions ever start to work over there, in the world economy ever picks up, you're going to see oil prices sneak up some. But I think that's going to be out of ways. That in the meantime, I should be selling some of these calls a little harder than I have. And you know, there's never, you always want to make the perfect trade. It's even more so when you're trading for other people. If it's your own account, you don't have to tell anybody if you're screwing up, right? I mean, you don't like it, but basically, when I sell a call for 40 cents for my clients, I want 40 cents to be the high. I don't want to sell it at 38, see it go to 40, even if it goes all worthless. I'm miffed I didn't get the extra 2 cents. That's just me. Because you want to do perfect for your people, and it's very hard to do that. But it's gonna take a little while to get into every day's a selling of something opportunity. Because we haven't been like that for a long time, and it gets in the blood. I mean, I can see where people now that have never seen interest rates, 8%, horrified that we're going from 2.25 to 2.5. But I understand it, right? Because I'm having trouble going back the other way, that every rally is a time to sell. Because for how long, it wasn't that way. But right now, people are selling these rallies as much as they're buying the dips, Jan, which leads me to believe we might be range-bound for a while. Of course, that could change tomorrow.
I would agree with you there, and especially on our short side on these things, that falls right into it. That was very conducive to what we're going with selling the calls.
Yeah, I wonder if you had a full portfolio right now, and again, this doesn't give anybody any protection. If you had somebody, let's put it this way, didn't need any protection. I'm going to say the strategy right now that I would probably employ for somebody who needed no protection whatsoever was a long-term investor. I would go with a covered straddle right now.
Right.
But that's a conversation for another day. Where you're not naked short anything. I would never recommend anybody doing that. But I think that's right now would be the policy to have, John. I honestly believe that.
Right.
And now could we go down? I still don't think that there is danger on the downside, because I don't think people have a clue, and how could you? It's been so long that all of a sudden, if we did go to 6% on the interest rates, how these stocks would be priced differently, because they would be. I don't think there's any.
No question there, Tom. And like you said, people, all these people that are investing, when we had these ridiculously high rates, a good bit of them weren't even alive as far as that goes.
So, yeah, well, that's true.
So not to mention not remembering they weren't even alive.
Well, I mean, I remember the back end of it very well, because I was already working, and it's my job wasn't dealing with it. But I'd be very remiss if I could tell you that I could tell you what was going down when it all started in the late 60s, early 70s, and I was worried about college. And I wasn't coming home from class worrying about the money supply numbers. I was worried about going to play some basketball, right? Or get my homework done.
Get the next beer, right?
Yeah, but I had to get the next beer. So you had to do basketball, homework, and beer, and you had to be very efficient to get it all done in the same day.
And not necessarily in that order.
That was our thing. We played ball from 3 to 5, went to dinner, knocked off studying as best we could, and then wandered out to whoever had the special that night. We had it pretty well down. There was always a spot with a dollar pitcher, a dollar and a quarter pitcher. Imagine that today. Imagine Jay-Z going out and getting a quarter of a large pizza and 2 pitchers of beers for $3. But she doesn't pay anyway. When's the last time you picked up the tab, Jay-Z?
Always. I'm an independent woman.
Oh, God. You know what? Maybe I'd rather be young today if that's the way they feel. I'm not sure the ones in my generation, they didn't know what picking up a tab was about.
Right.
Just saying, not not disparaging anybody. So John, you got a good basketball team. Your football teams are going nowhere. Are you happy that the seasons are over or what?
Well, yeah, that's definitely a done deal. Basketball's somewhat in the rebuilding phase, but there's some excitement around that here, and even a little bit of popping with the hockey. But once again, that's in the building phase too. So.
What
happens?
What are you guys cutting your quarterback? What's that all about?
Well, just trying to get something done, but like you said, the season's over, so almost doesn't matter,
So, yeah, it's only halfway done. What do you got? 2 wins or something?
Yeah, well, exactly. So, what are you going to do with that, right?
No. My SP futures, we're only down 11 now. We're coming back. Dow futures down 104. And if he's down 48, the number of the day, even though nobody seems to care about it, CPI 0.6% versus 0.2, biggest number since 2012. Anyway, but nothing so far on that. Jan, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Got it.
Jay-Z, good job as usual. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.